Well, it's December, three Sundays before Christmas. So think back to normal times before COVID. What would you be busying with now? What preparations would you be making for whatever are your traditions? Well, I imagine none of that is happening this year. So maybe we should just start with taking a moment to grieve and to feel the pain of COVID robbing us of our rituals and traditions, the Christmas things we look forward to, everything we love and anticipate, the people we do Christmas with, the things we do with them, all taken away without our permission. And here is us filing an official complaint. We don't like it. This somebody wrote this poem. It popped up on my Facebook. 'Twas a month before Christmas, and all through the town, people wore masks to cover their frown. The frown had begun way back in the spring when a global pandemic changed everything. They called it Corona, but unlike the beer, it didn't bring good times. It didn't bring cheer. Airplanes were grounded, travel was banned, borders were closed across air, sea, and land. As the world entered lockdown to flatten the curve, the economy halted and folks lost their verve. From March to July, we rode the first wave. People stayed home, they tried to behave. Now is November, and cases are spiking. Wave two has arrived, much to our disliking. Frontline workers, doctors, and nurses try to save people from riding in hearses. This virus is awful. This COVID-19, there isn't a cure. There's no vaccine. So, now what? We are in the Advent season, the four Sundays before Christmas. Advent is a time about waiting. The early Christians spent it repenting and fasting to prepare for Jesus' second coming, for him to come a second time. They understood that God's rescue of creation is still ongoing, and the plan will not be complete until Jesus comes again. But sometime in the Middle Ages, people began to spend Advent also looking back to the first time Jesus came, as they prepared to celebrate Christmas. They wanted to remember why we need Jesus to come the first time and what it is for God to come in flesh so humans can see and touch God, to hear his voice and look into his eyes when he tells us he loves us very much. If there's one thing about COVID, whether we asked for it or not, is that it's been a masterclass on waiting. We have been waiting for treatments and a vaccine, for scientists to get a handle on this thing so we're not risking our lives every time we step out of the house or shake somebody's hand. And maybe we modern people needed this because modern life has gotten so impatient. We're so spoiled with getting things done at the speed of light, forgetting what we want right this minute, same day shipping, and machines that cook dinner in half their time or heat water in 30 seconds. There's this Catholic priest in Toronto. He wrote that going through the COVID year reminded him of the half a year he spent being treated for colon cancer. And he describes that time as his private tutorial for what we're going through now. That got me to remember an ordeal that I had a few years ago that might have been my advanced training in waiting. When I spent over 30 hours in Heathrow Airport trying to get home from London. As you can imagine, it was not a happy 30 hours. And maybe you don't need to imagine because you have your own airport nightmare story. Well, this year, we are in the wait of our lives. Christmas is supposed to be so happy if we go by TV commercials. But this year, the world is united in grief. It feels like this line from Hamlet, to bear our hearts in grief and our whole kingdom to be contracted in one brow of woe. Every night when I lie down to go to bed, I have to check to relax my forehead so I don't spend the whole night sleeping in a frown. How do we drum up any kind of happy when so many people have lost loved ones and so many are still fighting for their lives in ICUs everywhere? There are just so many awful stories. Like that retired high school teacher in North Vancouver. He felt unwell recently and went to emergency where they told him he had cancer. So he came home and was mentally preparing himself for treatment, only then to have come down with COVID. His wife thinks he caught it when he went to emergency, and then he died a few days later. I can't imagine what kind of Christmas that family is going to have, but then they're far from alone in their loss. I so want to tell you that it's going to all turn out okay, for this sermon during Advent to be upbeat. But how to do that without sounding phony? I don't think we know yet how this thing will turn out when the best vaccine in the works still leaves us with a 5% chance of infection. So this Christmas, we just may have to spend it on the edge of our seats with fingers crossed and on our knees, praying that God will work it out okay. And maybe that is the proper posture for Advent anyways. That for our Advent wait this year, we get to recover that sense of urgency, that we wait on God because we so badly need him. There are plenty of epic waits in the Bible on God, like when creation waited on God to create everything in that first silence. Like in our reading today in what we're calling the second silence of our Advent season, when Jacob's family ended up as slaves in Egypt, where they cried out in suffering for 400 years. That story climaxed with Moses and a dramatic sea crossing. The sea opened and allowed the slaves to cross over to safety, but closed up again and buried the pursuing Egyptian army. And then we have that triumphal hymn from Moses we just heard, sung and danced to as a jig, perhaps. Both horse and driver God had hurled into the sea. Well, but you know what? When they were crying out to God because life was unbearably hard, they didn't know that it was going to end, or when it was going to end, or how spectacularly Hollywood it would be. Nor did they know that climactic end to the years of slavery would just be the beginning of more years of wandering in the wilderness. That the promised land was yet another epic wait away. Well, that's where we are now. Just like them, we don't know how things will turn out. Not when, not how. Someone wrote a book about this sort of experience in our spiritual journey. He calls this the land between. It's the wait between crying out to God and when God hurls the horse and the driver into the sea. It's the trek through the wilderness between the Red Sea and the promised land. And he writes, I firmly believe that the land between, the space between where we feel lost or lonely or deeply hurt, it's fertile ground for our spiritual transformation and for God's grace to be revealed in magnificent ways. And while the land between is prime real estate for faith transformation, it's also the place where we can grow resentful, bitter, and caustic if our responses are unguarded. The wilderness where faith can thrive is the very desert where it can dry up and die if we're not watchful. The land between is the limbo we are in. It's not quite life as we have known it, that's behind us. And we're not at all sure what life will be ahead of us. It's life interrupted, and we're feeling more than a little disoriented. It's like sitting and waiting in an airport. I don't know anybody who likes going to the airport for fun, as if that's where life is really happening. I don't even think people who work at the airport think that, because I've worked at the airport for a couple of summers. Few of us really come alive waiting at airports, because airports, it's the land between. It's the in-between place in our life, the holding area we have to pass through between our house and where we got a rental for vacation. We just want to be there for as short as of a time as possible, just enough time to get on a plane and get going again. But even that normal amount of time is excruciating, because there's nothing happening there, and we just want to get back to life. That's what I wanted during my extended wait in Heathrow, to get back to my life. I'm always early going to the airport, that's how I roll. So on this occasion, I have spent 3 weeks in London. I had enough. I was looking forward to getting home. And after waiting for half a day in the lounge, and after finally settling into my seat, and when it felt like we were going to get going, the pilot comes over the intercom to say there's some sort of engine issue. So they need to find another plane. So we had to grab our bags and climb down these stairs onto the tarmac. Outside the plane, there were these British Airways buses that said Vancouver on it. I thought that was kind of funny, as if they were going to now drive us home since they couldn't get the planes to work. So, but the buses drove us back to the waiting area, and there we sat for hours. It took them hours to get that second plane ready. And it was about 8 or so in the evening when we were boarding again. So, it's people traveling with small children and those needing assistance first. I got to my seat again for the second time, but we didn't go anywhere because two people went missing. So we sat on the hot plane, it's summer, as people in the airport were running around making announcements, trying to track those people down. I don't know if they ever found them, because the next announcement from the pilot was that while we were waiting, the flight crew had reached the maximum number of hours their union allowed them to work in one stretch. So now they also have to find another crew. So another couple of hours on the plane, no air con, no food, and no more explanation. Then we were told they couldn't get another crew in, and we were done for the day. And so for the second time, we got our bags, climbed down the stairs, and boarded our Vancouver buses to go back to the terminal. In the land between, you really see how different people respond to stress. I am the suffer in silence type. I just want to get through the ordeal without making things worse for anybody. There are people who run away, like those two who disappeared and checked out without telling anyone and made us miss our takeoff window. Then there are people who like to spread the pain around. There are people yelling at the cabin crew. None of these are wrong, I suppose. Just different ways we handle pain and grief. Thank goodness for all the complaining psalms and all the complainers in the Bible, like Job or Jonah or Elijah or Habakkuk, who said, "How long, Lord, must I call for help? But you do not listen." It's a question. I don't know. You do not listen. But in the wilderness, the slave constantly murmured and complained that Moses said to God, "This is too much. I can't handle these people." This leads me to think that complaining to God and arguing with him is the very spiritual thing to do. And the Bible assures us that God hears all of it. Every complaint, every cry for help. Flight crews are trained for abuse, I think, is their real job, and not really to reheat food. So the ones on my flight were impressive. They were so composed and self-controlled as they stared into the eyeball of the people yelling at them. And they took it all very calmly and didn't escalate the tension. We too probably want to be careful to not be destroyed by bitterness at this time of our COVID wait. We want to be aware of our own inner monologues, aware of the suffer in silence type. And we want to be careful with our relationships, aware of the spread the pain sort. It would be good if we survive this year with our relational bridges intact, or even better, if we pull together and build some new ones. The best spiritual advice I have heard recently is to take COVID one day at a time, one moment at a time, just make the best of it. If I had to do that Heathrow thing over, and I don't, but if that ever happened again, that's what I would do. And I met a couple of Jedi masters that night. Across the aisle from me was the Swiss woman and her 11-year-old boy. We had been chatting all day. Her husband had gone to Kamloops ahead of them, where they were spending the summer with friends there. When we were told we were not flying that night, she leaned over and said, "Can we stick with you?" I said, "No problem." Now, it was the first week of Wimbledon. And like the Christmas story, there was no room at the inn anywhere. So I told my Swiss friend, "Let's run for the hotel that's right inside the airport." So we were the first ones at the counter. Well, the man told us they were fully booked, but he would call around for us. So we spent more time yet in another waiting area. But by now, a very long line is forming at the counter. It's all the other people from our plane. About an hour later, the counter person found us and told us he found one room in a nearby motel. But although we were the first in line, he said there was this elderly person in a wheelchair who also needed a room. Well, hinting that if we were decent people, we would let the other party have the room. So, of course, we took the hint. He thanked us and said they were making arrangements, and they directed us to the convention floor of the hotel. When we got there, they said, they had set out some food and hot drinks, and someone was handing out sleeping bags and camping mats. That was not a good sign. They had opened up three convention rooms the size of our ballrooms, the size of our convention center. In the back were all the families with crying babies and screaming kids. In the middle space, there was an elderly man with dementia who was speaking some South Asian dialect. He would wander around in the middle of the night, turning over the sleeping bags of strangers looking for someone. Did I mention he had dementia? So some people got annoyed and some people were scared, understandably. It took them a while to find an hotel employee who spoke his language to get him back to his family. When we got our sleeping bags and went into the first room, there was this Asian girl from Toronto, busy building a fort using banquet chairs. So I watched her for a moment, and then I said to her, "How do you know to do this?" And she said, "Well, she's been on many school trips, and this happened all the time, and she was used to it." So, of course, we started building our own forts. Just before we hunkered down, the Swiss lady said to me, her son had always wanted to go camping. He is having the time of his life. Yes, childlike faith, Jesus says. I need to be more like that kid, less uptight, sillier, more go with the flow. Did you hear about that kid in Pitt Meadows who's been writing jokes on boards in front of his house? Some of them are riddles. So you read the question as you pass one end of the house on the sidewalk, and when you get to the other end of the house, you get to read the punny answer. He said he's doing this because he thought his neighbors needed cheering up. So he was committed to finding and writing a joke every day. And apparently, he has managed to raise some money for the food bank and a charity for seniors along the way. So if we're open to it, the land between offers us an opportunity to learn new things, to do new things, make new friends. That priest in Toronto who had cancer, he said that he kept a sort of journal and he had an epiphany about halfway through. his 168 days of chemotherapy. He writes this: one day, about halfway through the 24 weeks, I had an awakening. I woke up. I woke up to the fact I was putting my life on hold, that I wasn't really living, but only enduring each day in order to check it off and eventually reach that magical 168th day when I could start living again. I realized that I was wasting a season of my life. Moreover, I realized that what I was living through was sometimes rich precisely because of the impact of chemotherapy in my life. That realization remains one of the special graces in my life. My spirits lifted radically even as the chemotherapy continued to do the same brutal things to my body. I began to welcome each day for its freshness, its richness, for what it brought into my life. I look back on that now and see those 3 last months before day 168 as one of the richest seasons of my life. I made some lifelong friends. I learned some lessons in patience that I still try to cling to. And not least, I learned some long overdue lessons in gratitude and appreciation, in not taking life, health, friendship, and work for granted. It was a special joy to return to a normal life after those 168 days of conscripted sabbatical. But those sabbatical days were special too, albeit in a very different way. I needed that encouragement to keep living and keep learning. I travel because I don't like traveling. I do it as a way to stretch my ability to adapt and be flexible. And those 30 hours in Heathrow were a doozy. But I will never forget the Swiss lady and her son, and this other British couple on the other side of me who went home to sleep that night. And when they came back the next morning and heard about our ordeal that night, they said to me, "If this happens again, you are coming home with us." I was so moved. They were doing for me what I was supposed to be doing as a Christian, to show hospitality and bless strangers, whatever circumstances we find ourselves in. In the early 200s, there was a bishop named Cyprian. He led the church through a time of intense persecution and a pandemic that at its height killed 5,000 people in one single day in Rome alone. And what he did at that time was to remind Christians that amidst the suffering, we still have a job to do. That times like these are when we are needed more than ever, when the world is suffering and in pain. This is the time we keep our eyes peeled for wherever we might be needed, and we trust God to provide what we need to do the job at hand. The one day at a time guy says, COVID has really made the cracks in our personalities show. Lawyers are noticing more couples applying to separate. Other couples in the city are looking to move into a house to create more safe distance between them. So apparently real estate is booming in the valley. Teachers and healthcare workers are getting yelled at. And according to our police chief, one weekend in November, within 1 hour in the evening, 2 people tried to jump off the same bridge. Thank goodness for the police who were there to talk them down. Maybe there's someone we know who could use a phone call from us right now, just so they know they're not completely alone. They call that plague in the 200s the Cyprian plague. They actually named the pandemic after the bishop, mostly because he wrote a description of it. But somebody suggests this. What if 5 or 10 years from now, when the people you know recall this awful year, what they remember is not just COVID and how awful it was and the upheaval to the world, but also the Christian compassion, caring, and love they encounter from us. That's something of a gospel experience defines this year, alongside everything that was hard and difficult. So maybe we could focus on that this Christmas, to embody good news in our interactions with people, the way Jesus embodied God's love in his body. And we do this not only because it's our job as God's people, but also as a way to keep from being sucked into our resentment and bitterness. That night in Heathrow, the kid who thought he was camping slept really well, unlike me or his mother. So with everything going on, about 5 a.m, we decided to walk back over to the terminal and find food and wait over there. When we tried to check in again, there was trouble because the computer said we were already checked in. So we were starting to get suspicious stares from the security people until this higher up person came and intervened. And after a bit of explaining, we were back into our land between waiting area. At about 11, we boarded that second plane again. After settling in, everyone feeling very ready to get home, would you believe it? The pilot came over the intercom and he said, in all my years of flying, I can't believe this is happening. There's a warning light on the dashboard. We're going to have to check it out. Better safe than sorry. So off we go from the plane again into our Vancouver buses. If you've been to Heathrow, you know there are a couple of gates. You have to take a short train ride to get to. Once you get to that terminal, they expect you to board a plane and leave. So there's no way to get back to the main terminal except through the secret corridor that is for airport personnel only. So here we are, everyone from our plane walking in the line down along the secret corridor trying to get back to the main terminal. Some worker in there saw us and yelled at us, "Where are you going? You're not supposed to be in here." And somebody from our group said, "We're the Vancouver flight." And the guy goes, "Oh, I see." And then he said nothing and just kept walking. So apparently, everyone at Heathrow has heard about the flight to Vancouver that went nowhere. At about 5 that afternoon, we boarded our third plane. I was so done with this that I said to my new friend, if this happens again, I'm just going to get on any plane just to get out of this airport. Well, that wasn't necessary because about an hour later, the plane took off. And as you can imagine, everybody cheered and applauded. I guess we can look forward to that. When COVID is over and we're singing in church again, we will hug in the foyer like long lost relatives and we will cheer and applaud. And that moment will be practice for us for when Jesus comes back finally. And we will never have to suffer these diseases again. No more tears, no more pain. That's the promise. That's what Jesus is bringing the second time he comes. So for now, we do the best we can to make something of this COVID Christmas, which reminds us why we still need God very much. Not just the first time Jesus came, but we still need the Father, Son, and Spirit to make their presence felt in our lives every day, especially now. And we do the best we can to do our job as God's priest during this season of extraordinary pain and suffering and need. We trust God to provide everything we need so we can do our job and serve well. And we keep leaning into God and staying open to new learning as we grow into the likeness of Jesus. That poem I read you earlier, it finishes like this. It's true that this year has had sadness aplenty. We'll never forget the year 2020. And just round the corner, the holiday season, but why be merry? Is there even one reason? To decorate the house and put up the tree when no one will see it, no one but me. But outside my window, the snow gently falls, and I think to myself, let's deck the halls. So I gather the ribbon, the garland, and bows as I place these old carols, my happiness grows. Christmas ain't canceled, and neither is hope. If we lean on each other, I know we can cope. Amen.